In the last 10 years, our field has gone from an unknown specialty to a household name. This brings unprecedented opportunities, but we need to rise up to meet them and give our patients the care that they deserve. In order to help others get better, we need to be better. This podcast will help you to become more confident with your patients, more successful in your practice or business, and a leader in pelvic health. And we're gonna have some fun along the way. Join us as we rise together. We're Jesse and Nicole Cozine, founders of Pelvic Sanity Physical Therapy and the creators of the Pelvic PT Huddle. And this is Pelvic PT Rising.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Pelvic PT Rising Podcast with Jesse and Nicole Cozine. Hey Nicole.
Hello.
Exciting things have been going on. I feel just like real good about everything. We just had our 200th episode of this podcast. If you haven't listened to that one, make sure to head back and listen to it. We're heading into 250,000 downloads, a quarter of a million downloads.
That is out of control. And we just want to say thank you so much for listening to us. Like when we first started this, when we had to shut down our clinic back in March of 2020, I knew that we were going to be consistent with it, but I certainly didn't think that it was going to, we'd be sitting here 2 years later with freaking 250,000 downloads. So thank you all to listening. And as always, it does help us for you to rate the podcast.
Yeah. Throw some stars up there. I think we're closing in on 100 of those ratings, comments, guys. We do read every single one of them, and it is kind of cool because this is a very one-dimensional formula. And so we really appreciate those of you guys who have emailed us, who DM Nicole after these episodes, who comment on the posts on Instagram. Really, honestly, keeping that conversation going. And one of the good ways to do that is those ratings. It helps people find the podcast, helps people know what to expect. We had one down there that was a 3-star that I thought was perfect. It was like, I enjoy some of their content, but they swear and they have strong opinions on how pelvic PT should be practiced.
And we're like, yes, that is the best 3-star review ever. Because that is so true.
Right.
It was a very honest thing that, yeah, like we're not everyone's cup of tea. And I actually hope that that person still listens because I don't know. I just feel like that's great.
Yeah, man. So, and if you're wondering whether to listen to the podcast, that's a great review for you. It's like, oh my gosh, they swear and they keep it real. This isn't the place for me. Right?
Right. So, it's perfect. It
watch
was great.
Out. So, but if you guys are enjoying it, please throw something on there, some stars and some comments. And what else? Oh, if you guys
PelviCon.
Are. Yes. Dude. If you guys are, have tickets to PelviCon, check your emails this week. There's going to be some information coming out about some add-ons to that experience. I don't want to spoil the information right now, but I will tell you that one of them features a magician.
Dude, a magician.
A magician?
No, not really a magician, but a magician. And just, it's going to be so awesome. And there's less than 6 months. Less than 6 months?
Yeah, 165 days.
Dude, we are so excited. It's actually going by really fast. And I know that these last couple of months, or these next couple of months will be go really fast as well. Also, stay tuned on the podcast. We have all of our PelviCon speakers will be featured on the podcast, and we're just really stoked about it.
Also, we have a title sponsor for PelviCon as well. We need to throw a shout out to CMT Medical Technologies, who are the title sponsor for the first ever PelviCon, and they have been so cool to work with, and just we're really excited to have their support, and they've been in the field for a long time. So always appreciate that. And there's going to be some great sponsor lineups. There's all sorts of things that are going to be going on. So you'll be hearing a little bit more about that as we go along. But first, Nicole, we need to talk about these doctors.
We do need to talk about these doctors. So you guys, today we are going to talk about physician referrals and what we should be doing, what our role is as pelvic PTs in referring to physicians. Y'all know that I get really fired up about how physicians just are really frustrating in general. They, you know, pretty much overall, of course, there are a few exceptions. I'm sure everybody in their repertoire of physicians has like one or two people that are super fans of pelvic PT. But I think we can all agree that it is just woefully underwhelming when we talk about how many physicians are referring to us appropriately. They either do it very little, or when they do decide to do it, then it's super inconsistent. There is, I've yet to meet a physician in a practice where the correct number of people of their referral choices are actually getting referred to pelvic floor physical therapy. And so I think we can all agree that in general, that they're just really frustrating, that they're not viewing our specialty as necessary for referrals. But I do think that can lead us down a path where we're kind of in this, and I've fallen victim to this, where I'm like, all physicians suck. They don't know anything, and they really need to get with the program here. And until then, I'm going to sort of write them all off as a profession. We've definitely had been through that. I do think that this podcast is a little shout out to them, and is recognizing where they do fit into our referral process, and looking a little bit into why that actually might be that we get so frustrated with what they tell our patients.
And really looking at the history of the field, I feel like there's this counter swing, which I think is what you're referring to, Nicole, because I think for the majority of the physical therapy profession, the decades of that physical therapy has existed, there's been this blind trust in physicians. They're the only ones for a long time who could refer to physical therapy. That was how you marketed as a physical therapy business. You would have to go and buy them lunch and all of that nonsense.
Yeah, and like what they actually put on their diagnosis was dictated what we could do, right? If someone said right hip impingement, then we could really only work on the right hip. And that was that. We couldn't technically look up into their back until we got a prescription that said, look up into the back or low back pain. And so that we have come from a place where physicians, what they say is kind of what goes.
And I think a lot of people still are in that mindset of, oh, well, their physician said that, there's no way that we could talk about that or challenge that or ask the patient to ask questions about that, that there is that like blind trust mentality. Or that another symptom of that blind trust mentality is just saying, hey, go back to your urologist.
Right. And this is where I feel like we also get into I hate using this buzzword. You probably need to do a whole other podcast about what is and isn't in our quote scope of practice. Well, that's not in my scope. I can't say anything about anything on the medical side because that's quote out of my scope. And really, at the end of the day, all pelvic health things related are in your scope. And we do have to be mindful, I'll say, about how we coach patients to go back to their doctors, which is what this podcast is about. But it is our job to help our patients navigate the medical system, because who else is going to do it? Nobody. And we are some of the best equipped people that have a true understanding of their actual needs, because we get to spend the most time with patients. They go to their physician they get like 5 to 10 minutes, if they're lucky, to get their whole symptomology and the recommendations from a medical perspective of what is best for them. And we get to spend, if you're really lucky, an hour a week with people, really getting to know them. And we have a lot more insight into what they're responding to, what they're not responding to, what they might need, and what medical interventions might be appropriate for them. And we need not be shy about saying our opinions on these things, as long as we're not full on being the doctor. Stop taking this medication. Of course, we're not going to say anything like that, but we still have a job, an obligation to help our patients and coach our patients to go back to their physicians and challenge stuff that we feel might be beneficial for them.
I hope the debunking the blind trust piece, and I think everybody in the field hopefully has seen, you know, there are good, just like in any field, right? There's good physicians and there's bad physicians. There's physicians who enjoy working with pelvic pain patients, and there's physicians who want them out of their office as quickly as possible. Like, that whole dynamic exists with all of that. So blind trust, I hope we can feel like is not an option. But also what Nicole was describing earlier, like total disregard also isn't an option. And I think sometimes we swing too far in that direction, especially, and even on answering the phone at clinics, I get really frustrated. And I can understand the temptation, especially for you guys as pelvic PTs, to get really frustrated with people who have just been getting the runaround from the medical system, who have been getting really poor care. And we hear too many of those stories. And I think the temptation is to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, man, that whole medical system, that physician-based system is terrible and isn't something that patients should engage in. And that throws the baby out with the bathwater. And I think that's what you wanted to talk about today, Nicole. Where did this come from? This was from a question from one of our staff members, right?
Yeah, it was actually super interesting. So one of the things that we do at Pelvic Sanity is we have like a group mentoring, like Voxer thread. Voxer is a little walkie-talkie app, so we can all just like kind of ask questions. And long story short, we had this question from one of our therapists about like, hey, I think one of our patients had urinary urgency frequency, more like interstitial cystitis, and she was prescribed an overactive bladder medication, which is not uncommon, however, is completely missing the boat with what interstitial cystitis both is and is not. But there are some patients that do benefit from a type of overactive bladder medication like Mebetric, or in this case, it was Vesicare. But are they really getting the right type of medication for that specific condition, right? In this case, my answer is no. In some cases, the answer can be yes. But the point being is that at the end of our discussion, the therapist had the conclusion that, oh, well, maybe I should just send her to another urogynecologist so that they don't just throw medications at her as an option. And I thought about it for a minute and I almost didn't say anything. And then I was like, you know what? Actually, no, that's not the right conclusion to come out from this conversation because this is where the genesis of this podcast is because we need to understand that physicians have their own process and their own differential diagnosis that we did not go to medical school for and don't probably know the half of. And a lot of times what physicians are doing is going down their line of interventions and saying like, this is what I can offer you. And guess what? If they're a physician, it is usually in the form of prescribing medications, performing a procedure, or if they're surgeons doing some sort of surgery. Those are their options for interventions. Like they went to a shit ton of school to look at all of those different options and the best case scenarios, and they have lines of treatment, and it's literally like why the AUA has guidelines on interstitial cystitis and all of those things. They have their own way of evaluating and treating patients. And I think the thing that we run into that we also need to recognize as both a pro and a con is that their options are usually medications, procedures, and surgeries. And so we can't be surprised then if our patient goes to a urogynecologist and they say, hey, this is what I can offer you. It's a medication. That is their freaking job. Now,
so that would be like a urogynecologist hearing back from a patient they sent to pelvic PT and being like, oh my gosh, all they did was neuromuscular evaluation of what's going on and worked on the muscles and nerves of your body. I need to send you to another pelvic PT. It's like, well, that's literally your scope and your job.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's like sending somebody to an acupuncturist and being surprised they got a needle stuck in them. It's like, well, that's what you do.
Yeah, so, right, totally. So it's like, you just have to understand that what they are good for our patients for and where their expertise might be lacking, and both need to be respected, essentially. And so I think that I just don't want the pendulum to swing too far into, like Jesse said, like we're not having complete disregard, but we're also not having just blind trust. The magic is in the middle. And this is what this podcast is about, is that our job is to control that middle for our patients. And when we refer patients to physicians or give our patients advice about going back to a physician, there are three major things that I want us all to be thinking about where we can have a great impact on our patients. Number one is that we need to help that patient have a plan, and we need to help them have a huge reason for their referral.
Yes. And this is where, I think this is where you fought back, Nicole, against the idea of like, oh, just send them back to their urologist, just send them back to their OB, when that's just like almost like a panic move for a physical therapist. Like, oh, they're not getting better as fast as I want. Oh, they're having this other thing. Just send them back to their OB, the same one who referred them, hopefully referred them to you. And you're saying you can't do that unless you give them a plan. Like, what is the reason, the rationale? What are they trying to get out of that visit with the physician, especially given that we know that they're going to have about 7 minutes to get that across?
Yeah. So I never want any of the people at Pelvic Sanity, or really any of you all, to be referring a patient back to their physician without having a very specific plan of why we're doing that and what we hope to gain from that visit. That is so huge. And helping the patient to really understand and set expectations so that we know that if they go and get a medication, then yeah, like we might be asking them to go back to their doctor to see what might they prescribe. And then like we can then coach them to be like, well, how important is that for me to take right now? What's the time to effectiveness on that? How long do I need to take it before I'm seeing a change in symptoms? Do we expect this to be masking symptoms versus actually curative? Like, we have all kinds of things that we can help guide our patients on where we can help them to have a better effective, a more effective session.
So that's number one, make sure that they've got a plan going in and a reason for going back. What's number two?
Number two is I want them to go back with some plan, like we said in number one, but then also to have some objective information we want to get out of that referral. So what do I want from that? Am I wanting a prescription to come out of that? Do I want an opinion to come out of that? And helping the patient to set up that conversation so that we're not necessarily biasing their opinion, but we're definitely asking a really specific question. We need to help our patients ask better questions so that we get better answers out of the session.
Cool. So have a plan, know what objective information you want. And number three, you said, was help your patient communicate effectively so that they actually come out of that visit feeling empowered, feeling like they have better information than they have when they went in, and making sure it's not a frustrating experience for them.
Right. And so this ends up for me being literally getting out a piece of paper and writing down in their session, like, this is what I want you to ask the physician. It's almost like a flow chart. If they say this, then these are the questions that we have. If they say this, then these are the questions that we have. And then having a conversation between us and our patients about what do they hope to gain from that conversation. If it's something like vaginal estrogen and they're concerned about a distant relative that had breast cancer in the family, you know, we know that that is proven in the literature to not be a significant factor for that, but we need to help the patient communicate to the physician, hey, I do have a concern about this. Is it still safe for me to take? Instead of going in blind, saying you need vaginal estrogen and having the patient go back and not having their concerns met appropriately from the physician in general. Because I will say this, like, just like we can't expect physicians to understand every aspect of our specialty, we don't understand every aspect of theirs. And so when we are asking for, can my patient have this type of medication, or is this procedure appropriate? Like, they are going through a whole list of different differentials and things that we probably have no idea about that they're taking into consideration when they're making their recommendations, you know? So I have another example where you know, a lot of times I will have my patients ask their physicians to delay a cystoscopy, right? Because if we're working under the diagnosis of interstitial cystitis, we know that the AUA specifically recommends or specifically states that a cystoscopy is not needed for diagnosis, that IC can be diagnosed by symptoms alone. And so, but it is also a diagnosis of exclusion. And I am not privy to all of that patient's family, medical history. Maybe somebody does have bladder cancer in their family that I'm not aware of. Maybe there is something else in their medical history or family history that would warrant a differential that would require a cystoscopy for symptoms of interstitial cystitis. Like, I don't know that. But what I do know is that specifically if the only diagnosis that we're working under is interstitial cystitis, then it is an appropriate question to have our patients guiding in that physician encounter. Can we delay it? Is there a reason why we have to do it right now? Because maybe somebody is freaked out about something going up their urethra, or they specifically have urethral burning. And is there a reason why we can't delay it for X amount of time to get the urethral symptoms under control, as an example?
Right. And then, again, you're allowing the physician to do what they do, but a lot of times the answer to that is, well, no, absolutely. I mean, we could wait 6 weeks and see what physical therapy does, and if we can get your symptoms down that way, then it might not be necessary.
Totally. The key being, right, is that number one, in that instance, right, if we're asking to delay a diagnostic procedure or something like that, we have a very specific reason. We need to help the patient communicate appropriately. We have a specific goal in mind when we are talking to that physician, and we've helped the patient to communicate and set expectations on what are we hoping to gain from this encounter. We want to know how important is getting a cystoscopy right now based on my symptoms and medical history. I can't answer that for them as a pelvic PT, but I can certainly guide the patient into having a better encounter with the physician. And that is what I want for all of us and all of our patients.
Right. You have the responsibility really to be guiding somebody through the medical system. Now, bring this down to the streets here, Nicole. Is there an example of a patient where you really did want to send them back to their physician with a plan for a very specific reason with an outcome like that? Is what would be an example of a time when, like, oh yeah, I really do want you to go back to your urogynecologist, to your OB, to your urologist, and ask this?
Gosh.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I feel like there's a lot of examples. Yeah, I mean, I think that this happens quite a bit, actually. So, you know, I see a lot of patients with pelvic pain, and a lot of the time, the patient is super against medication, right? They don't want to be on medication. I want to do this holistically, whatever that means to the patient, and I just want to do it as, quote, natural as possible. Well, the reality is that sometimes medications are important, right? And so there have been a lot of times when I will say, like, hey, you know what? I actually think that your nervous system right now is super upregulated, and there are some medications that can help to drop down and dampen that nervous system response. Things like amitriptyline and Lyrica and potentially gabapentin. Like, there are some things that we can do, and it can make physical therapy more efficient and beneficial in the meantime, because this is a really upregulated state that you're in. And, like, I might not be able to get it down. We need some help. It's okay to ask for help in that way. So I would like you to go to this pain management specialist, and we need to say, like, hey, right, we have to have them have a plan, right? I am referring you to a pain management specialist to help manage my pain so that we can tolerate physical therapy better and have a little bit more lasting relief in between sessions, right? That is a plan. The objective we want out of it is potentially medication options that will help to dampen the nervous system response and decrease that nervous system upregulation. And then number three is, hey, I need you to know, physician, that I am a little bit nervous and I want the least amount of intervention possible. What is the least amount of medication that I can take to become effective, right? So you're helping them to communicate effectively and efficiently in that doctor's session. And sometimes they'll come back with options of gabapentin or amitriptyline, or, you know, where they maybe would have prescribed amitriptyline at 25 milligrams. Now they're going to, because you helped that patient to effectively communicate, they're going to start at 10 and increase up to 20 very slowly. So that is an example of, yeah, I will totally do that and refer patients to a physician, but it's for a specific reason. And then we're helping to guide them in that way so that they come out of the session with the objectives that we wanted.
Right. And I think that's the point, is having them come out of that with what they really wanted out of it. Because I want to contrast with the way a lot of people would handle that is, oh, you need to go see a pain management specialist, period. Right? What does that patient come out of that visit with if you don't guide that conversation?
Right.
If they're not asking those questions, they come out with, well, hey, we could do prolotherapy and do all these injections.
Or like narcotics.
We can do a nerve block. We could do all of this stuff that you know that the patient doesn't really want and you don't really think is really necessary. But if they go in blind and they don't have any guidance from you, that's what they're coming out. They're coming out with whatever it is the pain management specialist wanted to do. So that's where you don't have the blind trust of, hey, just go see this pain management person.
Right, because they're going to give all of the options that they can do. Here, we can do all of these things, and you can have a ganglionic impar block. And the patient comes back and being like, instead of, and then the other thing too is to remember that if you don't give guidance to your patients, they can go and hear very different things. A physician can say, here's what I can offer you, because that's literally what they can offer, is medications and or procedure. And the patient comes back and hears, I need to do this thing. And now we have a whole cluster of BS that now we have to tease through, because now it's like, well, did the physician really say that? Or is the patient just like misunderstanding, or like, how important is that? Like, now we have confusion, and now guess what? We're going to be like, well, you're going to have to call them back. Well, that's a shit show trying to get the physician back online. Well, you're going to have to go back in. Now you're adding a second visit just to clarify the stuff that could have been helped at the beginning if we, as our doctorates would allow us to be, very much a guide into another physician visit.
So I hope that that helps to clarify how to be thinking about that and how to be thinking about physicians and working with them. And really, I feel like the underlying principle that I'm taking away from what you have, Nicole, is one, to understand what it is physicians can and cannot offer. And two, that we do have the ability, and you would probably say even the responsibility, to be helping guide the patient through all of that, helping them guide them through that entire medical process.
Yeah. And I think what is so surprising is that there's a couple of things, right? We have to know our shit if we're going to do it this way, right? If you don't know, then you need to ask a mentor and ask somebody and ask in the huddle and ask me on DM or whatever, because that is important. Because I will tell you that the more that you do this and essentially through your patient demand authority and demand some respect through your patient. Like, I have multiple physicians that are now coming in and asking me, what do you think is best for this person, right? Do we think it's medications? Do we think it's pineal nerve block? Do we think it's S2 block? Like, what do we think? Like, what does Nicole say? And it's because it's never like I talk to that physician every day for years. It's that I talked through my patients, and every single patient that I sent to them had good questions. And then finally they're like, oh, well, now, like, oh, Nicole must have a lot of knowledge in this field, right? So it's a roundabout way of also helping that just relationship and sort of demanding respect for what we know how to do.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. I think that is super helpful, I hope, for you guys as you are sending folks back to their physician for whatever reason. Would love to hear what your thoughts on this. Is this something, do you fall more into the blind trust category or into the disregard category? Have you been referring people out like this, or have you just been saying, I want you to go back to your OB? So let us know. Shoot Nicole a DM. send us an email, whatever it is that you would like to get in touch. But as always, we want to keep this conversation going.
And let's continue to rise.